starting out with God at the center of how we do and what we do. And then we've looked at our children. We've looked at why we parent or what is our moral or spiritual goal or purpose that's directing us. Because if we have the wrong goal, we're certainly going to get angry or go amiss in what we do. From that, we spent time looking at the kind of people that we're disciplining as a mentor, as a parent. Are they simple? Are they young? Are they wise? Are they rebellious? Understanding the category of where they are. And then we talked about what's really going on in their heart. Is it childishness or rebellion? Trying to determine between those two items. Is it just a lack of skill / childishness? Or is it a rebellious, slanderous, anti-God kind of spot that a child or a mentee is in? In addition to, in that little category, we could determine, okay, it's childishness, but that still needs to change, right? And it's not going to ever just be skill at that moment. I mean, there could be skill like learning to play a piano better that you're helping your child do, okay? And that's purely skill development, okay? Even some communication things are fairly just skill development. But almost everything we put our hand to has heart connection. Isn't it true? I mean, the heart comes out. And so when we say childish or rebellious, that doesn't mean that if it's childish that their heart is good. No. Matter of fact, I'm quite certain there's going to be some heart reasons that the childish behavior happened. It may be a lack of knowledge, but there's usually some heart things that get slipped in right away that aren't out-and-out rebellion, as in they hate God and they are pressing against him, but they aren't submitting, are they? And so this session today is to try and define that or break that down in a little bit greater way. And so many of you have seen this before because I've taught it for a long time and we teach it in counseling quite a bit. And I borrowed it from Sue Nyswander, a combination of Sue Nyswander's work and Thomas Zempel, who's gone home to be with the Lord now. Just a great man of God who directed some good things in my life. But if you look at this chart and getting to the heart of the matter, you see a number of shapes on it. And so if you're looking at it and yours has some blanks, the bottom box, the big box on there, I would label opportunity. That is if you're in a positive mindset. If you're in a negative mindset, you'll label it trial, okay, hardship. You could just label it a situation, okay, so you might want to fill that in. Well, you got all the blanks all at once here, didn't you? Okay, well, that's all right. You can fill them in. So opportunity, situation, that bottom box, this is what happens to all of us, okay? Your kid comes in the house and is yelling at you. Well, this worked earlier. Your kid comes in the house and is yelling, "It's not fair what's going on in this house." That's an opportunity, isn't it? It is. And what I do at that moment is not going to be ruled by how much my kid is yelling. I can't get to the other side of it and say, well, I did badly because my kid yelled at me. That's called blame shift. Okay? What I'm going to do next has everything to do with the question mark. What is in my heart? What is ruling my heart? And depending on what's in there, I'm going to have different thinking, different doing, and different feeling. And so when our child sins or when we sin, we should really look at, what was I thinking? Okay, and there's an event analysis that you have for filling out. You should really do a couple of these with each of your children. That'd be a great assignment over the next couple of weeks. A couple for yourself in those situations, okay? And you need to look, what was I thinking? Well, you say, but if what matters is what's in the heart, why should I look at what I'm thinking? Because if you're thinking evil, you need to stop that. Because you really could put little arrows on all these lines. Because what you think is going to influence your heart. If I'm thinking wrong things, I'm telling you what, my heart is going to be fed more wrong, even if it started in the right spot. And then doing. If I do evil, it pushes my heart to more easily do more evil. Does that make sense? And if I do right, this is why we do this with little children who are barely able to think yet about complex things. We make them do right things. What does that do? It helps their heart be right. So that's why we look at what I did. Was it wrong? Sometimes I think wrong, but I don't do wrong. Sometimes I think wrong, and then I don't do wrong. Doesn't that happen with you? I think murderous thoughts, and then I'm calm. Right? Now, do I need to change my thinking? Because if I don't, what's going to happen in my heart? Going to get bad. Right? Because the thinking, that bad thinking that no one knows, is going to pollute the heart. Guaranteed. That's how the heart gets polluted. One of the ways. It also gets polluted when I have bad feelings. You say, well, I can't help my feelings. Well, you can't help someone doing evil to you, but you can choose how much feelings you're going to have. The brain can do that when the heart is right. And that's why you'll see people in devastating circumstances and they act in a measured, peaceful way as God graces them. And that it controls their feelings, things that you would think would take them off the rails. So we got to look at my feelings. Are they sinful? Can feelings be sinful? Yes, I can have anger that is not sinful, and I can have an angry feeling that is most definitely sinful. Can I? So I'm going to look at those things in my situation. But what I really want to look at is what's going on in the heart. Let me read a few verses because I think it's important to go back to God's word for these pieces. But in Matthew 12:35, let me read a couple of passages. It says this, Matthew 12:35, the good person out of the good treasure brings forth good, but the evil person out of his evil treasure brings forth evil. I tell you, on the day of judgment, people will give account for every careless word they speak. For by your words you'll be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. He's using this as an illustration of a tree and its fruit. And it obviously connects very well in Matthew 15, where it talks about heart, where a person treasures this evil or this good. And it says this. It says, for what comes out of the mouth, this is Matthew 15, verse 18, but what comes out of the mouth proceeds from the heart, and this defiles a person. For out of the heart come evil thoughts, murder, adultery, sexual immorality, theft, false witness, slander. These are what defile a person. So we obviously, from these verses, if we don't check what is actually treasured, I think that word's a great thing. A lot of times we say, well, I came out of the heart, I didn't even know it was there. Well, we know what's in our heart, in part, even though it's deceitful. What we love or desire or treasure is in our heart. Isn't this true? If I love to have quiet to myself, and I treasure that greatly, when someone interrupts that quiet, how am I going to do? Probably not very well. If I love that, right? If I treasure that in my heart. So we have to look what's going on inside of our heart. What should be in our heart? Well, I put two things on this page to remind us of what should be in our heart. The top is the triangle. That triangle, actually, you should draw lines down from each side of that triangle that cover this whole scenario, okay? So whatever opportunity or trial hit that you would remember, the triangle reminds you of God, okay? That he has complete control of all of this. So when someone is sinning against you, God absolutely knew they were going to do that. No shocker to him. And with that temptation or trial, he has made a way of escape. So he not only knows it, but he doesn't just know it and go, bummer, wish I could have stopped that. Oh, no, no, no. God's in complete control, and he has determined to allow this trial in your life, in his control, and at the same time has provided a way of escape, not escaping the trial, but escaping sin that would come out of the trial. God absolutely has control over all that. And then he would look at us in this same chapter in 1 Corinthians, and he would say, whatever you do in word or deed, do all to the glory of God. So his triangle, complete control with great goodness and loving kindness for us and faithfulness, is over everything situationally that's happened. It's also over our heart. Isn't this good? We can go to God and say, God, I don't even know what's going on in my heart. And he knows. and can protect our steps. We might not even know what we're thinking. You ever had times like that? Your brain is just so fuzzed from everything that's happening so fast. You can't even think straight to process, to know what I'm thinking. But God knows right where you are and has made a way of escape even when your brain is feeble. Amen? Have you known him there? I've known him there. He's in charge. And all of it is for his glory. The trial he sent your way is for his glory. Your kid being naughty again is to be used for his glory. Because think about it, you have a fantastic opportunity to do the other thing that is the positive here and what's supposed to be in our heart, and that is you have a beautiful opportunity when your kid is naughty to love God supremely. Matthew 22, 37 through 40 tells us to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and strength. Love your neighbor as yourself, right? I mean, two things we're supposed to love. So love God supremely. When our kid is naughty, how do I love God supremely? I just obey God, right? I discipline them unto godliness. So as I tell my kids, I make life very painful for you at that moment in a gentle, kind way. Isn't that what I'm supposed to do? I'm supposed to. Loving God supremely. And if I'm doing that to my child, I'm actually doing the second command. Because if I'm disciplining them to godliness in a godly sort of way, then I am loving them sincerely, aren't I? I truly am trying to help them. And that's what's supposed to rule my heart. I have the cross there because it's a reminder of the gospel. Dave prayed this in his prayer, you know, that our parenting, which he said something like, it's our perfect opportunity to demonstrate Jesus Christ, what he did on the cross, his sacrifice for us. Right? His gift of grace to us. Every time we parent, we have, especially in the hardship, we have a fantastic opportunity to show the grace of God, to show that this gospel that has been given to us is what is in our heart ruling us. You know, if your kid is naughty, do they need the gospel? Absolutely. And if they're naughty a lot, do they need a lot of gospel? Yes. So don't be frustrated with that. If they're naughty a lot, it's like, man, they must need a lot of gospel. Time to gospel up, right? I mean, this is what God's calling us to go do some more of that. And just think about how often God has brought that gospel to us when we were so resistant. True? Loving God supremely, loving others with sincerity, knowing that God is in charge of everything. There are loves that steal and make us treasonous, as we've been learning, to the gospel. Dr. Zempel categorized them in six ways because, and I found this true in my life, I mean, all of our sin goes back to pride because it always elevates us over God. That's what it does. Every sin is like that. And so you cut one sin or one prideful thing out of your life, and I've heard it said a couple of ways, it's like trying to nail Jell-O to the wall, trying to deal with pride. Right? I mean, it just doesn't hold still. Or it's like this monster where you cut off the pride head, boom, and like four more heads come out. I mean, pride feels like that. You think you've dealt and understood one area and way you're proud. You deal with that, and it just seems to keep flying out of other areas of our life. Dr. Zempel summed it up with these six categories. And a couple of things I like about these, it helps us narrow down. Categories help us do that. They're not inspired by God. Matter of fact, I think of the passage in 1 John where he says, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. You could examine your heart using those three categories. Totally fine. That'd be good. There's more than one way to examine the heart using Scripture. I think these six things are beautiful because they are not inherently evil, but they are the things that capture our affection. They seem like a great summary. They capture our affections, and all of a sudden, we make them more important than God. Even though really every single one of these six things is from God. And I'll try and illustrate very briefly. So prosperity. I mean, does God condemn being wealthy? No. Matter of fact, sometimes he dumps it on people, right? But if I'm willing to sin to protect my wealth or to gain wealth, and I could be the poorest guy in the room, but if I'm willing to sin to protect or to gain, then it has become an idol. Because I'm no longer loving God supremely, I'm loving my wealth over him. Does that make sense? Prosperity. Peace. Does God call us to peace? Yes. Matter of fact, he tells us, be reconcilers, be peacemakers. But when I'm willing to sin to bring something to a peaceful, quote-unquote, solution, you know, I get my way, is what that means, then I've let peace become my idol. Power. Control. Are we supposed to be people of control? Titus 2. It's the most common word in Titus 2. It's what we're supposed to instruct older women to younger, older men to younger men. I mean, self-control, power. We're supposed to teach that and know that we have the power that raised Christ from the dead. But if I sin to control my life or other people, then it's become an idol. Halfway point here. I've done three. Know this. You can't know from someone's sin which one of these are ruling them. I can be drunk for all six reasons. Drunkenness is a sin. I could choose to be drunk because my life is out of control and I don't like what's happening, so I use alcohol. I want peace. There's no peace, so I use alcohol. I have wealth and I'm afraid it's going to slip away from me, so I drink out of that. I want to protect that position I have, that wealth that I have. And I'm drinking or being drunk for all three reasons. By the way, does drunkenness generally bring us more wealth or protect it? No. Does drunkenness bring more peace to our life? No, it always brings chaos. Does drunkenness bring control? No, it's absolute out of control, isn't it? This is true of all of our sin. Our sin that we do to try and keep what we want actually naturally causes us to lose it. For instance, I love to sin when prestige is dented. So when I'm disrespected, I like to be mad about that. How much do you respect a madman? Not really at all, right? And that's the way sin is. It's counterintuitive. What we go after as our idol actually destroys the very thing we want, because God wants us to have honor and give honor, doesn't he? And when we choose something other than him, then that honor we're supposed to have among us disappears. Protection. You should fear. Did you know that? You should. If a man walked on here with a gun and pointed it at you, you should have your heart go up into your throat. If you sit there and go, oh my, another guy is shooting somebody, something's really wrong with you, okay? You are not connected well. If a rabid dog walks in the room snarling, foaming, and jumping at people, you should be getting up on chairs, throwing things at it, and you should feel like, duh! Fear is not wrong. God gave it to us. You know, some of you have lived in Rapids so long, you drive like you have no fear. People cut you off and you're like, wow. And you don't even react. I'm worried about you, okay? You should have a level of fear when you drive. But when fear grips us and we can't drive a car because we're sure we're going to die, something's really wrong, isn't it? God gave us fear. It's not wrong. As a matter of fact, we're even supposed to fear God. But when we sin to protect ourselves, then it's an idol. The last one that I haven't talked about is pleasure. Aren't you glad that God gave us pumpkin pie? I'm going to eat pumpkin pie, I'm pretty sure, because I saw ingredients go in the shopping cart. I was pretty excited about it. I think I get a piece. And I'm going to eat pumpkin pie without sin. How about you? Because you can. One small piece, right? Not like half a pie. That's what Dad and I like to do. You get that half, I get this half. Don't tell him I said that. But that's how we usually think about it. No, one small piece, and to his glory, eat it. And I can enjoy pleasure. God made us as pleasure receptors constantly, right? We hear beautiful music, and we're like, whoa, that's so cool, right? He just made us that way. Matter of fact, we don't celebrate that enough. If we'd be thankful for all the great things he's given us to enjoy, which he tells us to do, to thank him for that, we probably wouldn't seek too many of the other things or get out of balance. But when I sin to have pleasure, then that's my idol. So in your homework, or as we go to our rooms to talk a little bit, what I want us to do in the room is try and do, in particular, an event analysis. So pick a last situation that you didn't do very well on, probably, and walk down through it and see, what was I thinking? And if you say, I wasn't thinking anything, then that's what you were thinking. You were thinking, I know what's right. That's what not thinking means, right? I know what's right. I know what I'm supposed to do in this situation. And you just barged onward. So it's called limited thinking. But you were thinking. And what was your action? I didn't do anything. I sat there stone quiet. Then that was your action. And sometimes stone quiet is sinful, right? I mean, if I'm about ready to step in front of a truck, should you go, I wonder if this is a time to talk? No, I would hope you'd be my helper. I hope you'd knock me down so I don't go there, right? I'd want you to respond in a significant way. Sometimes because protection is our idol, we don't help someone and we let them get hit by the semi in our marriages. Well, if I say something, there'll be war. I don't like that. And I don't know what kept you. Maybe it's fear, protection. Maybe it's your love of peace. Maybe it's my wife, because you should define these. My wife said she thought peace was hers for a long time, but then she realized, no, it's pleasurable to have peace. So she pulled it backwards and said, no, that was pleasure in some of her situations. By the way, I should just ask you, what's your favorite two of the P's? Which are your favorite two? Do you know what they are? How many of you would say peace is one of my top two? Okay, there's a few hands. That's not one of mine. I don't really care about that one so much. Prestige. How many of you are like me? Prestige? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Prestige. Yep. Okay, good. Power. How many of you like to control? Yep, I'm there. Those are my two favorites. I can't even remember the rest. Pleasure. How many of you like pleasure? Oh, yeah, I like that one, too. Sometimes. Right? Prosperity. See, Americans, we never say that. I don't believe you a lick either, because if I came and took your stuff, you'd be smoking mad. But it might be protection at that point. It might not be pleasure, or prosperity, right? What one didn't I give? Protection. How many of you like protection? Yeah, fear-based. Oh, yeah. Especially if we grow up with lots of circumstances denting our heart of attack and abuse. See, because that's attacked our heart. Because it was wrong. Sin done to us invades our heart. And we have a choice at that moment to either deal with it, understanding God's control and his goodness and how he's loved us so that we can love others, or we start framing idols, let me tell you, when we are sinned against. And we don't even know we did it. And then they're there. And they have to be rooted out. Is that making sense? So we're going to go to our rooms, think about a little bit. What was I thinking? What was I doing? What was I feeling in that situation? And then defining, and I have a little cheat sheet for you, were those thoughts biblical or unbiblical? Were the actions biblical or unbiblical? Were the feelings biblical or unbiblical? You say, I can't help it. I just felt that way. Well, I feel like choking people, but it's not a right action ever that I found yet. But I feel like that. You say, that's an action. I didn't do the action since I was like 15. But I have felt like it many times. And it's a wrong emotion. Because if I keep nurturing that feeling, what will I do? Something bad, right? Matter of fact, out of that feeling, I do bad things. I don't choke. But I do bad things, don't I? If I don't deal with it at the heart level. And then lastly, identify which one of the P's, which one of those six things was behind the unbiblical thoughts, unbiblical actions. And I never judge somebody when they pick one, because the answer to all six is the same. Now, you can do specific verses that really point at each one of the six, and that's wise. But the truly big answer is to be satisfied with the love of Christ. And let me tell you, there's enough there to be satisfied with. And when I'm satisfied with the love of Christ, I don't need someone to honor me. I still hurt when they dishonor me and are mean. you know, but I don't need it. I don't need peace because my eternity is set. I have peace. I don't need it from some other realm or some other person, right? I don't need protection. As I've said before, you can shoot me full of holes. I'm not going to die because I have God who takes care of me. It'll hurt, but I don't need protection. I'm loved by God. That's how he is the answer to each one of those. And obviously some specific verses on each one to be wise. We're not trying to solve them tonight. We're trying to identify and work on that. So in the very back section is anyone who's mentoring, grandparenting, or you just like Sean the best on explaining this. That's good enough reason to me. I don't care. They're thinking about it. Amy and Kurt are going to be down in the teen room tonight, and I have Pastor Jack's room, which is parents of grade schooler-ish type people, in room 110. You have like 3 minutes to get there. Bye.